Ed and Rizan Ferrelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Now it's time for this.
Warning. The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
That is the little ears warning, which means that not only is it Wednesday, but we're joined again by our resident sex and relationships expert, Rachel Cook. Rachel, how are you?
I'm really good, thanks, Avra. Good to talk to you. Lovely. Oh my God, haven't we got questions coming out of our ears?
Questions
as usual.
Coming out of every possible orifice today. It's lovely to talk to you. We'll get straight into it, right? Because there's loads to get through. So I want to give you this one first. So someone messaged in and said, random message, and maybe it's already been done, but can you talk about sex drive and what is normal for a woman of 30 odd and what should be expected? I'm a woman of 28 years of age and I'm writing out of frustration after listening to my best friend who just had a baby and is suffering from the same problems as me. I have three kids. What should I want my sex drive to be? I'm sleep deprived after having three sections or none. I thought it was just me, but then I listened to a woman who has just had one child. How is this okay?
Okay, so I think it's incredibly, incredibly common that sex drive will change and usually go down after having a child. For some people, it goes up. For some people, it just changes to maybe a different time of day. For some people, it's about needing much more time to recover from the birth. Yeah. And that can also be for the person's partner as well. That can also be that their sex drive changes because, as this person has pointed out, you know, you're sleep deprived. You're probably reaching a point of being kind of touched out, touch fatigue, where you just have, you know, a baby kind of on your body or a child on your body for so much of the day that even though you might really want to connect with your partner sexually, just the thought of being in physical contact with someone is just like, ugh, I've had enough of it. So, you know, I think a lot of this is, you know, people often see it as hormonal, which sometimes it certainly can be. But I think a lot more of the time, what is going on is that the people who are bearing the child, you know, are often don't have enough support. You know, they are doing a huge amount of work at home. Maybe they're trying to juggle a job as well. Or, you know, there might be multiple kids. They might be, you know, there might be, you know, pets, dogs, whatever else at home. And then often they're having to do a huge amount of housework on top of that. Mm-hmm. So it often, I think, is a lot more related to the person who's born the child being absolutely exhausted, which, of course, her partner can be as well, who could be of any gender. Mm-hmm. But it tends to be related to that. So I would say there isn't really a kind of normal here. What you've got to do is kind of work out, well, between you and your partner and you in yourself, you know, what's going to make you feel kind of the most sort of, you know, kind of connected to your partner. If you particularly enjoy sex, maybe you could, it's certain kinds of sex that are going to be easier for you than others. Maybe certain positions are more uncomfortable. So just being aware of that, you may well need more lube. So just kind of taking into account that there isn't a normal, you just kind of have to work that out for yourself and know that that may well change in time, especially as your kids grow up and you have a bit more time and space for yourself.
We do a lot of freaking ourselves out as well, don't we? Because like, it seems like a theme whenever I'm in for Jen and I talk to you, it's a lot of women and people in general kind of like compare themselves to their friends or people they know, and it's totally natural because like you kind of try and get a benchmark, but it can freak you out, can't it? If I'm not having as much sex as them or I'm having more sex, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, definitely quality over quantity here. You know, for some people, they just really enjoy having sex really regularly and it doesn't have to be too deep. Don't think about it too much. And for other people, you know, it might be that you only have sex once a month, but you really put time aside to do that. Yeah. Whereas for other people, that would be unimaginable. So, you know, it's also very common, I would say inevitable, that you're going to have incompatible libido over, especially over time in a relationship, because there's just so many things going on in life that could lead you to have a higher or lower sex drive. So the most you can do is talk to your partner, work out what's comfortable. You know, if you feel like you have vastly different sex drives, you're going to have to negotiate on the type of sex that you have, whether that's solo, partnered, you know, and being more creative about the ways that you can enjoy sex together. That might be masturbating beside each other while, you know, watching or listening to some porn, or it might just be, you know, a bit of oral sex, just for one of you or something like that. And just expanding that range so that you can see it more as connecting, fun, playful, stress relieving time rather than a chore and a pressure.
Brilliant. So another one that we got in was, I found out an ex and I are both signed up for a singles event soon. I'm not one to chicken out of stuff, but I feel like maybe I should let him know I'm going so that he's not blindsided. It ended pretty poorly and he's a major jealous type, so it could be a disaster. I'm only out of the relationship since September. I don't have the nerve to cold call him and let him know. What would you do?
Okay, this is an interesting one because it's not clear to me from how this person has worded this whether they're taking on maybe a bit too much of a kind of caretaking role for this other person's feelings. Or, you know, what they've said that this person is a major jealous type, so it could be a disaster. I mean, that sounds like this may have been emotionally abusive and, you know, that this is, you know, is kind of that there's a threat there.
Yeah, it's a red flag a bit, isn't it? Like,
that he's going to blow up at this person at the event. So I
which
would
he's going to too, by the way.
Which the other person is going to as well. And so, you know, I would say figure out first for yourself how much of this is you kind of, you know, thinking too much about someone else that might be to do with, you know, I guess we don't know the gender of this person, but maybe they, you know, especially for those of us conditioned, you know, socialized as women, tend to be more taught how to be, you know, kind of people pleasing and accommodating and taking care of other people. So that could be what's happening here. Or it could be that actually this person was really behaved poorly towards you. And it sounds like you potentially are quite frightened of how he might be, in which case, you know, I would say, you know, it's not your job to notify him, but I would say maybe take a friend along or something like that.
That's a good idea.
Because, yeah, you don't want to have to be cancelling going to things that he might be going to, but also that's really not okay if you feel like actually a level of threat from him.
So if you've got a good pal that you can maybe rely on to just kind of wing woman you or wingman you or whatever it might be, that might be, brilliant. Okay. Now I've got a quick one for you here, but not quick actually. Someone said, what to do when your partner, male, takes too long to come? I enjoy it very much, but after 40 minutes plus, it's too much.
Surprisingly common, you know, I would say, particularly as people are in longer term relationships, particularly as people get older. So this person has specifically said your partner male takes too long to come. So, you know, again, I would just talk to your partner about that. You know, sometimes people feel very obliged to, you know, orgasm or ejaculate during sex. And sometimes for all sorts of reasons, again, that could be stress. It could be medications you're taking. It could be just how your body works, all sorts of possibilities. Sometimes it just takes a very, very long time and a lot of effort to come. So I would chat about it because maybe you haven't talked about different ways of, you know, having sex and stimulation and stuff. And maybe there's some easy ways to just learn more about the type of stimulation that he likes that makes him come more quickly. Or maybe he's really enjoying these kind of long sessions, in which case you have to negotiate that that's just a long time. Also, we don't know what we're talking about when it's too long to come. Are we talking about purely penetrative sex?
Yes,
or
exactly.
About any kind of stimulation? Because, you know, for penetrative sex, the average for most people is kind of 5 to 10 minutes from what we know from research. And so 40 minutes, although again, if that works for both of you, brilliant, that's totally fine. But as this person has said, it's too much. You know, is that causing discomfort, pain? Or are they just really fatigued? Work out what's wrong. Talk to your partner. You very well may find that they don't really want to be kind of banging away or whatever you're together 40 minutes. So, you know, you can probably take the pressure off and find other ways, either focus less on the orgasm or find other ways to come.
That's brilliant. Another one. Hi, Jen. I'm a man and I'm living with my wife, but we are separated. I've not had sex in over 10 years and I feel I need some in my life. I feel like I need to move on with my life. Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I have loads of suggestions to that. Your choices are, you know, move out. Mm-hmm. So don't live with your wife anymore. Or you can decide to be separated, but maybe you could talk about potentially having a sexual relationship with each other again without necessarily, you know, being in a kind of feeling like you're fully together again. Mm-hmm. Or what is potentially the best option if it feels like it's just not possible to move out, either because you've kids or because of your, you know, housing setup. Maybe it would make it incredibly difficult to live apart.
Yeah.
That you can talk about how you might work out that you can both date other people, which might mean that you agree that you, for instance, won't have people back to your home where you live together, that you only go to other people's homes. But it sounds like there's lots of options here, considering you are separated. Mm. Where you either move out or don't move out, but start seeing other people.
Is that really interesting though? Like, I'd say that's happening more and more now with, say, like even the housing crisis and stuff.
Totally.
People who are in relationships and not in the relationship anymore, but are still in the house that they may have bought together or rented together or whatever, because there is no other option. Like, it's wild. It touches everything.
Yeah, big time. It's a huge thing, you know, and there's partly a kind of, yeah, economic aspect to this that just makes it not feasible for some people. So I would say, you know, of course, it doesn't mean you have to rule out having sex whatsoever. Mm. It just means that, yeah. Now, what I am finding is there's more and more people who end up dating other people in a similar situation.
Yes.
And so then it might mean that you either have to book a hotel, or what you do is you just agree with your partner that you're going to have, you know, evenings where they go out and do something else and you have your date over, you know, and that, you know, although that might feel very weird to begin with, you know, often it can mean, especially when your communication is good with each other, that it can be really amicable and you can be a really great support to each other.
Yeah.
So it's very possible.
That's brilliant. Someone else said, I'm living in a house with my partner. This is similar, but we aren't together as a couple. She doesn't want me to leave, splitting the family up, as she went through this before and has seen friends and family go through the same. I find it extremely difficult to live this way, and I think the kids will be better seeing two happier parents in separate environments than two up and down parents in the same environment. Should I stay or leave the family home?
Yeah, so that one again, it's not easy, you know. I would say there's no kind of one size fits all solution to that, because, yeah, it sounds like, again, both people want different things.
Yeah.
And I would say that, yes, overall, two happier parents apart is way better than two unhappy parents, or, you know, as this person has said, you know, kind of very up and down, volatile in how they're feeling, potentially, or just very mixed, that is less supportive for children. But I think this person is making an assumption that their partner would feel better if they were apart. So I guess this sounds to me like you definitely need to go and have a professional talk this through with you, because, you know, if you still haven't come to anything between the two of you, then you could probably do with some support on being able to work out the kind of practicalities of that and what else you might try, because it's not okay for one person to be miserable.
Yeah.
You know, when it sounds like actually, you know, when one person is miserable, usually both people end up being miserable anyway.
Yeah. Here's one about selfish lovers, right? How do you solve the problem of selfish Irish men in the bedroom who are all about their own pleasure and BJs, etc., and somehow the woman's pleasure, e.g. oral sex lasting about 30 seconds, is an afterthought?
Yeah, well,
how do you solve that problem, Rachel?
You solve it by not dating them. However, I'm being slightly farcical, because obviously you can't always tell beforehand by what someone says or how they seem before you had sex with them. But I would say, you know, most people don't communicate beforehand. You know, it's becoming, I'm really amazed and delighted by the younger generations. You know, when people come to me who are sort of 25 and under, often they have just excellent communication beforehand.
They're going to save us all, I swear to God. They really are.
Just so much better at being able to say, this is what I'm into, this is what I'm not into, these are the kinds of things that I'm willing to try with you. You know, having this kind of sex menu beforehand of different things that they're into and not into, and, you know, sort of have kind of like a traffic light system for during sex to, you know, communicate with each other, where it doesn't have to be that you're constantly talking during sex, but that certainly there can be quite a lot of setup beforehand. So I would say to this person, communicate what you like and what you want, you know. that can be on the date. It can be just before you're about to have sex. For instance, you know, you could say something like, I really enjoy penetrative sex. Mm-hmm. However, I don't orgasm for it from it. I much prefer to orgasm from oral sex. How into that are you and how up for it are you? Now, again, yes, someone might say that they're really up for it and then they only do it for 30 seconds or whatever. And then you can just say, hey, can you give me more time, please? You know, or, you know, or keep going.
Yeah.
You know, that was great. Keep going, please. I don't know, you know, where are you gone?
Not done yet. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so just kind of being clear about that rather than, you know, of course, it can be tiring if you're finding that this is happening quite a lot. But I would say, you know, being clear in your communication, practicing beforehand, you know, writing down, this can be helpful. What are the sorts of things that you can say that sound reasonably natural to you, knowing that they will still probably feel a bit uncomfortable and weird to begin with when you're getting used to doing this sort of thing, but that you don't have to sound, you know, really robotic and clinical. You can just be like, yo, get back down there.
That's brilliant. The actual thoughts, I just love the idea that like Gen Z are... they have this, this is just natural to them. This is sorted for them already. And the rest of us are like, what do I do? How do I even ask this question?
Like, we've got words. We've got words that we can use, you know, asking someone whether they generally like to or need to stop whatever you're doing after they orgasm, you know, these sorts of things. You know, you can have so much of this chat and it just makes you feel so much less ashamed and insecure and uncomfortable when you're able to talk about this stuff without kind of, you know, of course it can still be funny, but you know, it's great if it feels like sort of playful and kind of hilarious at the same time.
Exactly.
Without having to feel like, you know, a kind of bold school child, because, you know, unless you're really into that, then, you know, that's not a great vibe.
Exactly. Exactly. This next one's interesting because it's kind of related to addiction as well. I'm worried that I've become addicted to masturbating. I was doing it once a day or a few times a week like any normal person, but now I've gotten really into listening to this porn podcast, realised I'm way more into the audio than the visual aspect of porn, and I'm having a wank multiple times a day now. Could this harm my body or stop me from living a fulfilling life?
So this person has, you know, made an understandable assumption about, you know, what it is for a normal person once a day to a few times a week. And I would say, again, if there's just such a huge variation, and also, you know, not just from person to person, but at different periods of their life, because sometimes, you know, I've known many people who masturbate multiple times a day, and that is, you know, works perfectly well for them. It's not something that they're finding like compulsive or that's causing them shame or, you know, sort of like stopping them from living their lives. And then there's people who only masturbate once a month and it's causing them tons of shame and stress and fear and, you know, kind of like feeling really preoccupied about it. So it's not really about the quantity. I would say, now, obviously, if you're doing it 20, 30 times a day, it kind of is partly about the quantity because it's just taking up a lot of your time. But, you know, within reason, it's not really about the quantity. It's about how, what your approach is to it. You know, if someone is masturbating and, you know, feeling awful about themselves before, during and after to some degree, you know, that's not great. Obviously, that's not very good for their sort of emotional health. Mm-hmm. But I would say here, you know, if this person has recently discovered that they've gotten into kind of audio porn, it's probably a bit like the first time you discover sex or porn or something new sexually.
Something different, yeah.
Yeah, it's something different and you're probably just feeling like the novelty of that. And so, you know, you're probably just enjoying having something new in your life. So I would say, as long as it's not stopping you from sleeping, eating, you know, kind of doing your work and engaging in your kind of social relationships, then wank away.
Brilliant. Wank away. I love it. Finally, Rachel, one last one for you, right? Yeah. Could you please give us some guidance on, is it Peyronie's disease? Am I pronouncing that properly?
So it's Peyronie's.
Peyronie's disease. Yeah. I've had the bend for as long as I can remember. I'm in a long-term relationship with a partner I'm very happy with. She has a twisted pelvis and some positions seem difficult and can sometimes hurt. How can we go around this? And is there any way of straightening the member? It's recently been bothering me and I often feel insecure about it. Thanks, Emil.
Yeah, so this is an interesting one because it's not actually that rare, but very few people have heard of Peyronie's disease.
So I have never heard of it. I didn't even know how to pronounce it. So thank you so much.
Yeah, so it's a non-cancerous condition resulting from basically scar tissue that develops on the penis,
okay,
and can cause curved and painful erections. So basically the your penis will over time become more curved. Now, obviously, penises vary in shape and size, and having a curved penis and curved erection isn't generally, you know, a problem and is very kind of common. Mm-hmm. But perinees basically causes a significant bend and often pain for some people. And it generally doesn't go away on its own. Early treatment soon after developing the condition can stop it from getting worse or can sometimes improve symptoms. But the condition kind of typically stabilizes after 3 to 12 months.
Okay.
And the pain can improve within one to two years. But the scar tissue, which can also cause penile shortening, so it can make the penis shorter and the curvature often remain. So basically, we don't fully know why people get it. So it generally seems to result from repeated injury to the penis. So that might be certain kinds of, you know, very, very vigorous sex. It could be certain kinds of kind of athletic sports activities, or as the result of an accident. But for some people, we think it might just be an inherited trait or linked to certain health conditions. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of oral medications that have been have tried to treat perinees disease, but they haven't really been shown to be very consistently effective. So for some people, drugs injected directly into the penis can reduce the curvature and pain. Mm. And then there is also something called penile traction therapy, which involves stretching the penis with a kind of a mechanical device. And there is also surgery that people can have.
Okay.
And so I would say, you know, I don't know, I'm guessing if this person already knows the name of the condition that they have hopefully been to a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But say there is quite a lot of options here. And I would say talk to a few specialists if possible, because there may well be some really good options for you. And I would say in this, you know, it's quite difficult to know without knowing exactly the extent to which this person is experiencing it, that yes, there are some ways that you might be able to straighten your penis. But with someone which has their partner has a twisted pelvis, I would say you really just need to keep communicating about that, knowing which kind of angles and positions work better for you, which also might change based on the time of the month. If, you know, a partner has a menstrual cycle, it might be to do with all sorts of things. So I would say just keep talking about it and also see some specialists.
That's brilliant, Rachel. Thanks so much. It's a psychotherapist and mental health consultant, Rachel Cook. She's at Rachel Jane Cook on Instagram. And you can email the team 24/7 on jen@rte.ie with your relationship and sex questions. Rachel, thanks so much.
No worries. Talk to you after.
Chat to you soon. Good luck.
Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.